Hey, what you waiting on? Check, checkers on your phone. This the Tony Sands Show. Turn your radio on. Chelsea just turned down like a field goal, so we in the zone. Got games like a stadium. I'ma go ahead and pack the dome. I'm cooler, smoother. Make you think with your medulla. You a student. I'ma school you with the facts that I'm producing. This is for the high schoolers, college students. Nah, everyone can do it. Do this. I ain't new to this. My style is rich. It's lucrative. Maneuver through it. You know it's fashion. You know it's so sensational. Like my big homie Tony. You could catch me every Monday at the kickoff on Sunday. I got these cold hard facts and we ain't talking Sundays. Co-host with Kelly Daly. Shout out to the big homie. You know it's so sensational. Like my big homie Tony. Co-hosting with Kelly Daly. You know it's facts only. You know I'm so sensational. Like my big homie Tony. Tony, Tony, Tony. Go BBS Radio.
The Patriots brass to keep him around.
Well, first of all, let's be clear. I think there's a mutual decision, okay? I think both sides had healthy, positive, productive conversation. I don't believe this was a contentious thing this week at all, but it's sort of like when you are married for 24 years and you are in a situation where you have to end the relationship, okay? There's a lot to get through, a lot to sift through, and in the end, they decided that they were better off going their own ways. And it's a situation where basically that's what they figured out was the best thing to do right now, to go their own ways. They had these conversations Monday. Bill Belichick was not in the office Tuesday. They continued Wednesday. And here we are today with a press conference. And it's a situation where they now will have that press conference later today. And they have to find a new head coach. Bill Belichick has to do what he has to do. And again, we have an 8th vacancy in the NFL right now at the head coach position. Again, David, there's so much that these two sides have been through over the years, so much that they've been through together, that they are in a spot here where this was delicate and sensitive, and they had to go through what they did. So, it's official. The relationship is ending, and that will be the deal. He's leaving New England 15 wins shy of breaking Don Shula's NFL record of 347 wins as a head coach.
Guys, listen. It is what you call Black Monday throughout college, throughout the NFL, throughout all ranks of football when it comes to hiring and firing. And it has been just that. Black Monday, when you look at all the coaches, and me and V was going back and forth. V was talking about who possibly is going to get released, who's going to have to part ways because of relationships, and it's been just that. When you look at some of the topics that are going on that we're going to tap in, we're going to tap into, and it's amazing how two goats, retire. Definitely. In the same, well, I wouldn't say retire, but leave their post in the same day. Two guys that are close to each other, that coaches just like each other and do things in the same manner. And I would want to say in a dictatorship type of way, to where it is one way or my way. And both of these people, both coaches found out, Nick Saban, Bill Belichick found out that this game may have passed them up from a standpoint of this generation is a little different than the generation before them, to where that past generation did what you said. This generation is going to ask you to explain what you said, and if they deem necessary to do what you're saying, they will do it or they won't. That's how that goes. When we look at a lot of things that are going on, Eric Bieniemy at this point, unless things have changed since we got on the air, hasn't gotten a chance to be interviewed. We're going to dive into that topic. And then one of the biggest topics that a lot of people are waiting on, what will happen if the Dallas Cowboys do not pull off this game against the Green Bay Packers? Will there be a coaching change in Dallas?
Wow.
We are going to dive into that topic and listen. But one of the, I think a lot of people knew about Bill Belichick. Everybody kind of knew that that was coming, that that right. was going to happen, and it was going to, it was just a matter of time. But man, this next one, to go and to hear this, wow.
That's how you train like a beast.
Whole squad ready. We came here to see Jeff, what you got? No, no, no. Not on my watch.
No way.
Bring what you got, I'm going to the top. You can bring what you got, I'm going to the top. Bring what you got. Bring what you got. I'm going to the top. I'm going to the top.
That's how you train like a beast.
Whole squad ready. We came here to see Jeff, what you got? No, no, no. Not on my watch.
No way.
Bring what you got, I'm going to the top. You can bring what you got, I'm going to the top. Bring what you got. Bring what you got. I'm going to the top. I'm going to the top.
The guy Cedric Urban will be joining the show, speaking on his relationship with Nick Saban. He had a unique relationship with Nick Saban while Cedric Urban was at Michigan State. He's going to delve into it. He's been busy and he took time. I called him today once. I said, listen, I got to get somebody on that is coached up under Nick and understand what Nick's passion is about, especially after I saw the one interview with Nick Saban and how and what he was talking about, what it would take the to continue in this game, because in this game you got to see. As a matter of fact, let's go
while
ahead.
While we wait for the soundbite, I just want to add on one quick thing. It's amazing what this man did at Alabama, right? His previous coaching career is amazing within itself and where he went and how he became who he became. But I mean, they said something ridiculous today, like there's no 4-year starter under Nick Saban that didn't win a national championship. So if you stayed four, you guaranteed you got a chip.
Yeah, you was guaranteed a national championship.
That's amazing.
I think when these in this last tenure, these guys started seeing, and I think he started seeing some things, and it changed. Can we do me a favor? Before we bring on our next guest, I said, wait a minute, what you're saying is, okay, do we have him right now, Thomas? Oh, he's on with us. Okay. Listen, before we introduce my next guest, you know, and this is family, so we're going to get deep on this interview. No holes barred. Can you play that introduction to Cedric Urban before we introduce Cedric Urban?
Schultz hands off, and again they break the run to the Spartans as Cedric Urban on first and 10 breaks it ahead for a gain of almost 11 yards. Michigan State, first down. Down and distance, that's what Saban preaches. We got to make down and distance favor us as Cedric Urban makes it favored, and now he takes it across midfield and down to the 47-yard line of Notre Dame, where the last line of defense, the free safety, Deke Cooper, brought him down, but it was a 16-yard run. In the second half, only 3-0. They built their lead early. They led 17-0 early in the second quarter. Oh, it's a option pass. It is caught at the 8-yard line. Gary Scott goes up and comes down somehow with an option pass, a 24-yard gain. Irvin threw it. Cedric Urban.
Actually, he throws it very well. I mean, we knew he was a good running back. We knew he was a good receiver.
A little high, says Gary, but I'll take it.
Yeah, Lamont Bryant with pressure all over Urban. He still makes the catch. Scott still down on the ground. That's his fifth catch of the day for 66 yards.
Without further ado, listen, Michigan State. When you talk Michigan State and you talk pounding, you talk bruising type of runner, you cannot exclude this name from the rap. Cedric Urban joined the show. What's up, Sad? What's going on, my brother?
What's going on, Tony?
Nothing much.
Hey, I don't even have to be on Zoom to know what video you just showed, because I've seen it so many times, right?
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I wish I had that Tony Sand kind of speed, you know what I mean?
Wait a minute. I see you wish for my speed, but I wish for your power. You feel me?
Right. We can put it together, man. See, we can break a lot of Mo records.
I'm saying we could set a lot of things between the Big Ten and the Big Eight. Man, we could have did some great things. And when we talk about that bloodline, man, that bloodline is endless of the talent that runs through our bloodline. But before we get into that, Sid, let's get into it. You was in a unique situation. And what I mean by a unique situation, man, you played up under and coached with one of the greatest coaches to ever walk the sideline of college football. Take me back to your high school year and you being recruited by Michigan State, Nick Saban, and what was it like once you got there with him, while you was there with him, and in your exit? And also, we're going to get into you when you coach with him, because you did have a chance to coach with him, what that was like. But what was it like first? What was it like when you got to Michigan, when you was being recruited by Nick Saban?
Well, I mean, first, coming out of high school, you know, I was one of the top running backs in the country, made USA the all-day, all-American.
Correct.
And that I went on, I committed to. And I say that because when I got to Michigan State, they didn't think they had a chance. So back then, you know, no social media, no cameras. I didn't know, you know, my running back coach, Bobby Williams, told me, hey, we all was looking at the fax machine.
Correct.
Because what you committed to, Ohio State, Tennessee, Florida State, we just thought we didn't have a chance at all. And I didn't know that until years later, like you said, in 08. So 12 years later, I know of this story that all the coaches was waiting on the by the fax machine, waiting to see if I was going to, you know, send that fax. But it was a great situation because, you know, one of the guys from Broward County was academic and eligible, and Mark Renard, who was a pretty good back too.
Correct.
And if they had to play football in February, they was going to have to start with a walk-on because the other starter was petitioned for a 6-year. So far as I wasn't looking at name back then. I was looking at an opportunity to play right now because I felt like I had the talent to play right now. I was just that motivated. I was just that encouraged and had that desire that I wanted to play right now. I don't want to wait. You know, if I go to Florida State, I got to wait behind Warren Dunn. And, you know, call it. But like you say, it's that bloodline. You know, somebody, God bless us, where we just so confident that we know we can do it if he gives us a chance.
That's it.
And then you got to think, you know, high school ended June 12th. My first game, September 7th, I scored 4 touchdowns on national TV 3 months later out of high school. So, you know, with that part, it was a blessing. Coach Saban kept his word by giving me a chance and opportunity. And, you know, I'm forever grateful.
Now, tell you, and you said Coach Saban kept his word to you. And I know my coach, Coach Mason, was a guy that I loved. What was it like? What was the grind like for athletes under Coach Saban?
You know, one thing that I learned coaching with him in 08, that he did the same thing all season, practice schedule, time, whatever, since 96 to probably last week, he had the same schedule as he had since I was playing for him in 96.
Wow.
But what that showed me now as a coach is myself is being consistent, having structure, and believing in what you're doing, and that is going to work. He does the same thing, Tony. I'm talking about practice schedule. Friday before the game, the walkthrough, his speeches. You know, he walk around with like, I don't know, I think it's like 67 cent in his pocket. He's just a straightforward line type of person. It's even to the point when we was in coaching and I was coaching with him, he'll say a joke and the coaches wouldn't even laugh and he'll have to be like, hey, you fuckers, you don't think it's funny? He just that straightforward and he hold everybody accountable, man. I mean, to the housekeeper, they got to make sure everything has got to be straight line and got to be accountable and got to be consistent. That's one thing I learned from a coach's standpoint.
Now, from a player standpoint, you play for him. What are some of the things that he expects out of players? You know, because we look at when we were playing, the things that was expected out of us and this new generation of what is expected out of them. And what was it like What was the expectation as a player when you stepped on any campus, whether it was Michigan State, where it was Toledo, or whether it was Alabama? What did Coach Saban expect out of
you? You know, accountability. One thing I can say, even in myself being a star player on the team, you know, he'll call you out. Mm-hmm. And what he did was, you didn't understand. I didn't understand as a player. You know me, I'm mumbling on my brother, man, what's wrong with this motherfucker, you know, whatever it is. But then you know what? He was sending the message to everybody else. Because guess now, what? He did it with Mark Ingram. He did it with Mark Ingram. He did it with Julio Jones. He did it with all his top players. He hold them accountable. Wow. You know what I mean? Okay. So it was almost like you was walking on a string line. But you know what he'll do? He'll call me out. And I may not like it or whatever. But then he'll come back and say, hey, Miami. Hey, baby. You acting like a little baby today. You can't take a little, yelling. You know what I'm saying? And then you can respect a person like that. You know what I'm saying? They ain't just always in your face, boom, boom. But then he can come back and then give you that hug and warm you up and let you know, hey, I just want you to be great. You know what I mean? It's the little things that count. You know what I mean? So it's coaching point, it's learning point, it's life lessons. But you don't see it then. But I see it when I'm able to train and coach my own kids.
Correct.
Now I can say them same words again because now I know what they mean and now I know why I said it. And now I can even give them an example that's something I went through that, hey, you may have a chance to go through, but you can avoid it if you do such and such, such and such.
Right. And Thomas, can you do me a favor? Because it alludes to what you said. He was doing the same. He had the same regimen from the time he was with you all the way through his 17-year tenure with Alabama. And I'm going to let you listen. I don't know if you heard this interview that he did today. Thomas, could you play that interview that I sent you with Nick Saban, exclusive interview?
Let's start with the simplest question of all. Why did you decide that this was the right time to retire?
No, I don't think there's any good time, especially when you're a coach, because once you're a coach, you think you're going to be a coach forever. But I actually thought that in hiring coaches, recruiting players, that my age started to become a little bit of an issue. People wanted assurances that I would be here for 3 years, 5 years, whatever, and that got harder and harder for me to be honest about. And to be honest, this last season was grueling. It was a real grind for us to come from where we started to where we got to. Took a little more out of me than usual. And, you know, when people mentioned the health issue, it was really just the grind of, can you do this the way you want to do it? Can you do it the way you've always done it and be able to sustain it and do it for the entire season? And if I couldn't make a commitment to do that in the future, the way I think I have to do it, I thought maybe this was the right time based on those two sets of circumstances like I said, there's never a good time, but I thought maybe this was the right time.
Now, Cedric, and it alluded to what you said earlier. He just got to the point, and I kind of saw this said about a year ago. I kind of saw this coming out of last year that it didn't look fun to him anymore. Did you see that at any point?
You know, I can go back to probably like 2 or 3 years ago. You know what I mean? And I say that because, let me give you an example. I'll never forget, we beat LSU, and we weren't supposed to beat LSU, LSU. And everybody back on the plane headed back to Tuscaloosa. You know, coaches having fun, talking trash. I mean, everybody rejoicing, having a good time. And I'm sitting behind Miss Saban and Coach Saban. And he got a laptop looking at Mississippi State. Everybody on the plane, if it's 120 people on the plane, 119 enjoying that win that we just had, and he's looking at Mississippi State. So when you talk about the grind, that's one thing. We're listening to that interview because I didn't hear earlier. I can understand that. Guess what? Because when we got back from LSU and it was a night game, we got back at 12. You know what? He had the same regimen. He's going to go to church, and he's going to be in the office at 12 o'clock because the meeting started at 1 o'clock.
Correct.
And then that next Monday, he's going to be there at 7:30. A 7:30 meeting for him started at 7:20.
Correct.
You know what I mean? So these are a lot of things that you learn in life. Like I try to teach my son, it ain't okay. You got to be there at 7. It ain't okay to leave the house at 6:45.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Leave the house at 6:20 so we can make sure anything, a flat tire, anything happen, we can adjust and get there on time. I learned that from Nick Saban.
Correct.
But now, he's one of those guys where he's one of those guys you got to think about it. You look at a Tom Brady who probably could have played another year if he wanted to. But you look at those guys that's great at what they do. They know how much they put into it. They know the sacrifice that go into it. And then they know when is when. Because when they know they can't do that same thing they've been doing to make them great, they know they can't be, their greatness cannot be performed if they don't sacrifice and do the things that they know that got them to be great.
Correct.
So like he just said, if I can't wake up the next day and be the Nick Saban I've been for 17 straight years, then guess what? I'm just not going to do it just to do it because I'm not an average guy.
Correct. Do you feel? I understand. Do you feel with the way that college football has changed, and we're talking about NIL transfer portal, do you feel that kind of rushed this made him see this decision that, hey, wait a minute, hold on. Now I got to recruit kids, and now I got to keep recruiting the kids that I have. Do you feel, and listening to that, being around them, do you feel the new era of college football speeded this process up for Coach Saban?
Oh, yeah, because he also said that, you know, that of course, Tony, that played a part of it. Because you got to think, he was one of the guys that spoke against the NIL.
Correct.
You know what I'm saying? And then you got to also see how is it going. Tony, I can be a freshman. I know I can be a senior in high school, and I can receive some money to go to a school. And if I don't like it that first year, I can get back in that portal and get some more money to go to another school.
Correct.
You know what I'm saying? So you got to think. And Coach Saban is one of those like, hold on, no. I'm just not going to give you something that you didn't earn it. You didn't deserve it yet.
Correct. You know
what I mean? He's one of those guys. You know what I'm saying? You got to earn what you want.
Correct.
So I know that played a part because guess what? Now the competition is even now.
Correct.
You got to think. He lost some recruits over the last 5 years to the Georgias, you know, to the he lost the big tackle to Miami. Why? And if you look at anybody that's in the top five, what tree they came under?
Yep.
Look at Texas. Yep. You look at Georgia. You look at Texas A&M when Jimbo was there. You look at Mario. All those guys had a chance to learn and know how to recruit from the greatest.
Correct.
So, I'm tired because guess what? Y'all taking my secrets. I ain't got no more. And then I got to try to play y'all in these playoffs in these championships. I ain't winning like I used to win before. It used to be easy for me.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying because it has made college football. We know, and we came up under those type of guys. I came up under Coach Mason, who was up under Woody Hayes, who was a tough guy. These kids nowadays, and they're not coming to your campus with the intent, hey, I want to be able to come here and make this program a winner. They're coming with the intent first. What could you give me first? If you give me what I want, then I can possibly help you win. Or you can give me what I want. I get here, I pout like a baby, and then I exit after I done got bad. And I think when I looked at it, when this NIL thing came up, and it was a lot of stuff, that's when a lot of stuff between him, Jimbo, and Deion Sanders kind of got clouded up there of what was said and how it was said, and he kind of alluded to that. And I said then that I think this game is slowly starting to slip away from one of the greatest coaches to ever walk the sideline. And we've seen it. And it was amazing how he spoke about it, how he said, listen, I can't do this anymore. When you hear that from a coach that you knew that was a grinder, what's the first thing come to your mind when you heard those words, I can't do this anymore?
It's a lot of things like you got to put in the pot, Tony. You know what I'm saying? You got, like you said, the NIL deal, the playoff system. You know, like you said, this year you got to think, Alabama struggled, really.
Yeah.
I mean, you struggle to beat Auburn. You know, you lose to a Texas. You know, it's things that you over the years that, you know, you went in the game already. Before you got off the plane, you was up 14 points.
Correct.
You got to think about this. I said this earlier on another show. Name me a head coach that went through as many OCs and DCs as Nick Saban over a 17-year period.
Correct.
And then, and then like you say, this year, he had to become more of a DC. You know what I mean? Yep. He had to put his hands in it more. So he really had to work more than before. Before, right. Over the years, from 08, when he had the Kirby's and the Schumanns and those guys of the world, those guys was in a system. Now I got to bring this guy in. I got to bring this new guy in. I got to bring this new guy. We got to teach this guy. We got to teach that guy. I got a quarterback that really can't throw all the throws, but he can run the ball. But, you know, I don't have that guy like, you know, we can, like I had over the years with the Bryce and the Tours or whatever it is. So, hey, it's like, man, where is this going?
Correct.
And then on top of that, I got to fight the NIL. Then I got to fight the Georgia's. Now all of a sudden Georgia is coming now.
Correct.
You know what I mean? So it's a lot of these things that come into place. And it's like, and then he probably asked himself, what else I got to prove?
Correct.
I took a school that was dead. You know, this Alabama was dead for years.
Yeah. Before he took it over.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
You got to think, his first year, he went 6-7. The next year, we go 14-2 or 12-2. Then the next year, we go 14-0. And then, hey, now we got Heisman out there. I mean, come on. Yeah. So when he thought about it, he was like, come on, you know what? We really weren't supposed to make it to this far. You know what I mean? We did it. You know what? And I'm tired. Sometimes you just get tired, Tony.
Yeah, you're right about that, man.
And then on top of that, it don't hurt that you just bought a $15 million house in Jupiter.
He knew he was. And once he put that money down on that house in Jupiter, I knew then, and it came out. Okay, hey, listen. Just as all great ones do, I want to live in South Florida and enjoy the fruits of my hard labor. Man, said, listen, thank you for that insight. I know you got a busy schedule. You got to go on another show at 8 o'clock. And I thank you for taking your time out to join the Tony Sands Show, me and V. V, you got one question you want to ask before you leave? Go ahead.
Oh, no, I really appreciate the information and the knowledge, brother. You know, I just want to ask you, how influential do you think Nick Saban will be on the next coach at Alabama, finding the next coach?
You know what? It's almost like going behind Vince Carter in a slam dunk.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? if I'm the next coach, right, soon I sign that contract, the first thing I do, I ask him for Nick Saban's phone number, right? And I call Nick Saban. I say, Nick Saban, I got a pen and a pad. I got a whole lot of paper. Tell me how you did everything from A to Z. Right, I know it's my team. I know it's my own coaching staff. But you know what? I want to know how the greatest coach of all time ran his practice, ran his meeting, how he confronted the coach, how he confronted a parent, how he dealt with the administration, how he did. I want to know. Matter of fact, I want to know what you eat in the morning. Right. Tell me why you eat the oatmeal pies. Tell me why you play basketball in the summer.
Right.
I want to know everything you did, because guess what? I know where the level is at. I know you can't go to Alabama and win 8 or 9 games. That's great at Miami right now. You can't. You got to win the SEC championship.
That's right.
You got to compete for a national championship. So guess what? When you give me my contract and I sign pen to paper,
right.
Next thing I'm asking you to do is give me that, because guess what? I got to learn from the gold.
Yeah, you got to get the formula, basically. You got to get the formula. You got to get the formula for winning.
I know I can't be you. But guess what? I'm going to try to have the same structure that you had, because guess what? If I don't lose all these kids, the kids that's been in this program, we're going to run everything like it's been running, because guess what? It ain't broke.
Correct.
Of course, you got to get the Jimmys and the Joes and all that, but what you going to get them, but you got to, because you got to think, you go to Alabama, you got everything. You got the best of the best. You got the highest Nike deal. You got the best facility. You got the best of the best. You know, coaches going to fly private or whatever. You got the best of the best. So they got to do a good job in getting the big name, only getting the big name just to keep the recruiting going.
Now, and you say big names. There are several big names that are being thrown out there. And I'm going to take you through a scenario. And then you know who follows up next after your segment, because of the Detroit Lions, your team, one of your teams, and also Benny Blaze's team. Benny will be coming on in a little bit, because I got to talk with him about the Detroit Lions, and we're going to also get into a little bit of the state of the University of Miami, where they're at and where they're going. But when we talk about the University of Miami, let me tell you, Cristobal's name has been thrown in the hat. Norvell's name has been thrown in the hat. Lane Kiffin's name has been thrown in the hat. There's been
Not
some
right
names.
There. Not right there. If it's me, If it's me, you know, I'm going to get Kiffin. You know why?
Go ahead.
Because he has the mindset, and he's so much of a asshole that you're gonna need to do whatever you got to do to compete against Kirby.
Okay.
But now guess what? Kirby become the king of the jungle right now in the SEC.
Yes.
Right. Kirby is the king of the jungle from all aspects. You know what I mean? They already picked to win it next year. He gonna win the recruiting battle now, because now whoever you get, they not saving. So if I'm recruiting against that, I'm gonna use that sell pitch. So you need somebody in there that gonna stand up to the king, the bully. Kirby gonna be the bully in the SEC, because he gonna get the best of the best.
Now,
Kiffin is the only one of all those names that I would say that was he would say what he want to say, he would do what he want to do. He's an offensive minded guy. Which they got the skill guy, but they didn't use all the receivers this year.
Correct.
You know what I mean? And he's a guy that I feel like can recruit, and he's going to do what he got to do to stand up with the bully.
Correct. Hey, listen, man, like you said, we got it wild right from here. The guy that would fit this mold will be possibly a Lane Kiffin. Listen, man, thank you for joining the show. I got to get to – we're going to go to a commercial break, come back, and on the other side – we got my main man, another one of my family members, another one in South Florida. My main man, when it comes to punishing people on the defensive side, I bought you an offensive mind guy for running over people. Now I'm going to bring you one of the best. To me, the hardest hitting safety at the University of Miami. Benny Blaze will be joining the show as we come back from this commercial break. Thank you, Sid.
Appreciate you, Tony.
Thank you, my brother.
Coach Saban, this goat done took over our office.
And he's using it to send out medical bills.
Good hands.
Hospital bill for Prime.
Yeah.
Did you just say gap?
He's talking about expenses health insurance doesn't cover.
Good thing Coach Prime knows about saying one time.
Aflac.
Because Aflac gets you money to help close that gap.
Now how do we get this goat out of here?
Aflac.
Meet one of my new homies.
Get help with expenses health insurance doesn't cover at Aflac.com.
Elephant would have been scarier.
That's how you train like a beast.
Whole squad ready. We came here to see Jet. What you got? No. Not on my watch.
No way.
Bring what you got. I'm going to the top. You can bring what you got. I'm going to the top. Bring what you got. Bring what you got. I'm going to the top. I'm going to the top.
That's how you train like a beast.
Whole squad ready. We came here to see Jet. What you got? No, not on my watch.
No way.
Bring what you got, I'm going to the top. You can bring what you got, I'm going to the top. Bring what you got. Bring what you got. I'm going to the top. I'm going to the top.
Guess here is going to blow your mind when it comes to hard hitting. When you hear that song, man, that song brings the thunder down to when greatness was at its greatest. To me, the greatest college team ever assembled when it comes to first rounders, when it comes to putting together a team that changed the way college football rule book had to be rewritten. Welcome to the show. B, what's going on, my brother?
What's going on, Tony? Everything good?
Hey, man, everything is great. You know, I had to get you on. I had to get you on for two reasons, because of everybody's talking about the University of Miami, but not only the University of Miami that you had your stamp on You put another stamp on another organization in the NFL, the Detroit Lions, who are in the playoffs, and not only in the playoffs, but they have a home game. But let's go back to the University of Miami. You heard the soundbite that we played earlier before we brought you on. Man, a lot of people don't realize, and we talk about NILs, and we talk about a lot of things, man. We talk about football being football. What? Tell a lot of my guests that are listening, what was it like being recruited by the University of Miami? And then, you know, walk them through that process. And then once we get you to the University of Miami, the things that took place under one of the greatest coaches alive, Coach Jimmy Johnson.
Well, Tony, I mean, you know, about being from Broward County, that recruiting process down here was crazy.
Yes.
Okay. You had your Michael Irvin. You had Lorenzo White. You had me and my brother. Okay. And I really didn't want to stay here. I was like, man, I got to get out of South Florida. Boy, look here. That's just way too much talent. I've been competing with these guys my whole life, getting beat up. See, people don't realize that's why I ran track, so I could stand out on my own. See, that football thing, come on. Coming from Piper High School, you weren't going to get no recognition over there. Hey, look, and I tell people, if it wasn't for my brother going down to Miami and balling, man, I don't think they probably would have came by the Piper and looked at Ben and Blaze.
So, Ben, you talk about track. Now, you talk about, because a lot of people don't realize, you know, they look at how big he was as a big safety. They don't realize how special he was also in running track. Tell them, you know, they don't know you had Olympic, you know,
Tony, prospects. Look, every time I talk to people, they, like you said, they look at me right now. I say, man, listen, I was invited to the Olympic trials.
Trials, yes.
I went out there and competed in the Olympic trials. And because of that pedigree I had for running track, it just catapulted me to go down to Miami. And let me back up. Because of that track prowess, I had Jerome Brown, Brian, Talbot Bain, Melvin Braddon, Winston Moss, all of them came to that state track meet, Tony, my senior year. Everybody knew Brian, because Brian told everybody, Ben ain't coming to Miami. He said he going to Michigan. Man, them dudes wanted to kick my butt. Man, they say, I tell you what, you don't come to Miami, we going to kick your butt every single day till you change your mind. Forget an NIL deal. I was scared of them Negroes, okay?
Now, listen, I didn't want to bring it up, but you did mention, you mentioned the three-letter word, NIL deal. You know, a lot of people talk about the University of Miami, and they say, wow, a lot of things went on down there at U that, that made that place special. You know, I'm quite sure there was some NIL stolen in there somewhere. We can speak about it now because now they can't do nothing to us because they already have it on the ball. But once you got there with Jimmy Johnson, once you got to the University of Miami, a place that you had, like I said, you didn't have it slated. You remember Mike didn't have it slated on his, neither. These guys, I can remember when I went down on the recruiting trip and I was around, I had the pleasure to be around you guys a lot down at the University of Miami in the neighborhood. And when we talk about the University of Miami and the things that went on down there, give us an insight on what was practices like at the University of Miami.
Well, I tell you what, practice wasn't like it is now. I go down to the University of Miami now, Tony.
Yeah.
A lot of times I'm appalled. I look at starters and I go, man, why you slap the crap out of him? Yeah. Because listen, you're gonna play like you practice. I don't care what anybody says. You're gonna play like you practice. Yes. Nowadays, it's like patty cakes, man. I mean, 707 is what they cater these kids to practice like.
Yes.
And Jimmy, Tony, we would have a 2-hour practice, and if Jimmy feels as though he didn't get the butter from the duck, you got to go back in the locker room, get undressed, get dressed again, and start practice over again.
Wow.
Because Mike knew, Brian knew, Brett Perryman knew, look, been in the Jets, boy, in order for me to play on Saturday?
Yes.
Nigga, I got to slap one of y'all in the mouth during the week, boy. Because, no, Jimmy wasn't having that right there. Ain't no talking about I'm going to take it easy on you. No, man. No. Yes. They knew one of them was going to get it during that week, boy. No, because Jimmy didn't care if you came back from an All-American camp. No, bro, you got to put it in on Green Tree Field.
Now, man, you talk about those hard hit. I was there the day that you guys boarded the plane. I think it was heading to Arizona when you bought out the Army fatigues. Listen, I'm sitting there by, you know, because I was dropping Mike off. I was dropping him off, and I'm like, oh, I mean, business. They getting ready to go to war. I mean, who came up with that idea to wear the Army fatigue?
Hey, look, it was Jerome Brown and Winston Moss. You know, anybody that knew the General Giant, Jerome, it was very outspoken.
Yes.
Jerome will tell you, look at man, we ain't going out there. We ain't going to fellowship with them. We ain't talking to them. I don't want to see none of y'all shaking their hands. I ain't want to see none of y'all talking to them. He said, this is war, gentlemen, and that's what it was going to be. Because, Tony, I constantly tell people, there's no way. I give Miami credit, where credit is due. Yeah, that 2001 team, they say was the best team assembled. But, gosh dog, Tony, we the one that 86 bowl game. We had more guys sitting on the bench.
Yes.
That ended up playing in the NFL.
Correct.
You know what I mean? And people forget about that.
Yeah.
I ain't gonna never throw that 2001 team up on the bus, but I tell them all the time, boy, I tell you what. I'm gonna take the 86 over y'all all day long.
All day long.
They talk about Sean Taylor sitting on the bench. Man, look at I had Bubba McDowell sitting on the bench. Okay.
And you talking about and people when you said the word Benny and the Jets, I don't know too many people that played college football that had a whole secondary named after Benny and the Jets. That means, hey, I'm Benny and the rest of these guys. But tell me, you remember you went up against some of the greats. You guys went up against Brian Bosworth, guys like that, who was one a ferocious linebacker at the college level. And I tell people all the time, you know, Brian Bosworth jumped on the cheerleader bus when they got ready to exit the stadium to head to the airport because he was just that pissed off that Miami shut him down. When you guys was able to shut down Oklahoma, and you're talking about Jamel Holloway and one of the most explosive offenses around, what was that like? Did you guys knew then that the University of Miami was on to something great?
I'm going to tell you why we knew we were special. Because, like I said before, everything started at practice. And in order to show greatness on Saturday, man, I'm telling you, Mike, Brian, Winston Moss. Let me tell you, Winston Moss, Jerome Brown, and Alonzo Highsmith, all of them were roommates. Me and my brother were roommates. Wow. We did not take it easy on each other. One iota.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Yes. Can you imagine rooming with somebody and you don't got beat up during practice? Nigga, I don't want you coming back to the room talking about you finna take a shower. No, Negro.
You don't
slap me in my mouth and now you gonna talk about, no, we cool. No, look, I'm still mad. And so that's why so many rules got changed. Yes. You know, now you got to shake hands at the coin toss. Yeah. You can go back, Tony. You saw Winston Moss and Jerome Brown. They telling the referee, no, we ain't doing that right now.
Yeah, I remember that.
They telling Brian Barber it's going to be all day. It's going to be all day. Man, yes. We set the tone from the coin toss to let them know. And I often tell people, Benny and the Jets, when Tim Brown came to the Orange Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
And man, look, when that bounty was on their head, that boy cried like a little girl. Man, they took my dog. I said, man, look at me. This is a game of football.
Oh, yeah, because you had to see him. You had to see him at the Bob Hope special, correct?
Okay. And, you know, I think right now to this day, if I run into Tim, you know what I mean? We both going to be 58 this year. Tim's still mad with me. We talking about 40 years later, man. Let that go, man. You know what I mean? Hey. We were kids having fun. You got to let that go, man. Because I'm not going to lie to you, Tony. We talked to man, talked about the man, mama, his girlfriend.
That's what he said.
Look, man.
Yeah, he complained. Y'all talked about his mama. Y'all, man, they went too far. They just were talking about my mama, everything.
It didn't matter. Because, see, anytime you can get into a man's head, yeah, I right. win the battle. You yes. look at man, you worry about the wrong thing, man. You know right. what I mean? This is a football game. You need to concentrate on catching that ball. Sure enough, we were gonna spank that butt, but as soon as you touch it, you know what I mean? We had a bounty out on anybody that came to that Orange Bowl. And that's why we were successful. 58-0, it will never be, it will never, ever, ever be reproduced again.
Correct, see,
people talk, when people talk about the GOAT, I have much respect for Nick Saban, but Alabama would never been 58-0 at home. Nobody would ever do that again.
Yes, and you talk about that, you say home. Do you feel that when they tore down the Orange Bowl, that it hurt some of the mystique that the University of Miami had going into the future of football?
I really do. You know, it's like your grandparents. They're
right.
old. They set in their ways. And that's how the Orange Bowl was for us.
Yeah.
It creaked. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That little old beer smell was, you know what I mean? You could smell it even though when you're on the field. You know? But
yes.
it wasn't nothing like that Orange Bowl. And when you tell people, hey, it felt like the fans was right behind the bench, Tony.
Correct.
It felt like they could reach out and touch you. So you didn't want to disappoint any one of those guys. Because, man, when I tell you, they used to show up to, if we had a 1 o'clock game, them dudes there at 10 o'clock in the morning getting drunk, then cool to brown. And so when them buses showed up to the Orange Bowl, man, you know, you were ready.
Yes, you were ready to go.
Yeah, that opening of the stadium. Man, look.
Now, B, you get – now, you imagine how – and I'm going to enlighten those that don't know. You get drafted in 1988. But now, when you get drafted in 1988, within a mile radius of going south and going east of your parents' home, two other guys get drafted also in the first round.
Yeah.
You know, and your brother go high in the second one.
This is why I had to mention that whole dynamic.
Yes.
Because they can say what they want to say. And I often tell people, there were a few people before us. You know what I mean?
Correct.
Shouts out to the Stephon Humphreys and guys like that who paved that way. But before that 1988 draft, people wasn't coming to Broward County knocking down no doors.
No.
I tell people, me, Mike, and Lorenzo White, we all went before 15 picks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? In that 88 draft.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And Brian went, like you said, high in the second round.
In that right.
That was unheard of. I mean, you see the young kids nowadays, and when we be out at Carter Park.
Yep.
I say, understand where you come from.
Yes.
Broward County was built on the backs of other people.
Correct.
You guys are getting the limelight that was already created, bro.
Yes.
There was no limelight created, Tony, when all of us came out.
Correct.
People say, well, oh, let me go and see what they got down in Broward. Now people come here, man. It's people that's third tier. You know what I mean? Because they know Broward County is the mecca.
Master of football.
Football.
Yes, we are that. We are the program.
That's right. And so I'm always, you know what I mean, toot their horn, blow their whistle, whatever they call it, because the four of us, I tell people, we set the stage of what Broward County athletes were about.
Correct. You know,
just because y'all look at us now, we old and we look great. I tell, yeah, come on, you know me during speed camp. I tell you, I'm competitive as him and I. I tell, hold up, young boy. Yes. Look, because what I'm going to do, I'm going to play in my time when you're going to play in your time. Don't tell me I can't touch you because I'm going to choke the crap out of you.
Now, Pete, you talk about that. You get drafted by Detroit. Now, and we're talking about the excitement of this year with Dan Campbell. And the Detroit Lions are in the playoffs. They got a home game. They haven't had a playoff postseason win since 1991. They've been there since in 2016. But when you talk about a postseason win in 1991, what is some of the excitement that you've been hearing when it comes to the Detroit Lions and everything that goes into what it took to get here? Now, imagine, tell me this. When you get there, you come from a winning tradition at the University of Miami, and then you get to the Detroit Lions. What was your rookie year like for you?
Jason, it's funny you say that, because in 1988, me and Mike had similar experiences. He went to Dallas, and people don't realize, I think Mike and them went 1-15. I think we went 3-12.
Correct.
Tony, it was guys in the locker room was happy about losing. I said, man, I lost four games in 4 years. How y'all happy about losing a ball game because you getting paid on Tuesday? Yes. I said, Negro Luke gave me money for winning. How you going to sit there and tell me you happy about getting the paycheck? Dude, we done got mollywop, and y'all happy about that right now. Tony, I made so many enemies my rookie season. I tell you what. I ain't gonna lie. I kept going up there. I said, man, cut him, man. This dude is terrible. Cut him. They said, what do you mean, man? I said, he's terrible. You know, they look, you know how they always say, oh, so you're a company man. I say, no, because you ain't holding up your end of the bargain.
Correct.
I used to be down in Miami. Well, if Dan Stubbs wasn't getting no pressure on the quarterback, look at my man. Whoa. This ain't what we do. And what we do, I need you around that corner. You know what I mean? Rip and dip, get around there, because look. And so in 91, Tony, when we beat the Dallas Cowboys, and Jimmy had went there, and I knew Jimmy was going to turn that program around. Okay? Right. And we beat them. Barry had a fantastic game. Our defense played superbly, and that very next year, Tony, I tell people, Dallas added to the roster.
Right.
Detroit started taking away from the roster, and when you start doing that like that because of, well, I don't want to pay him $20,000 more than what he made last year. And Jimmy said, no. I'm going to get rid of Herschel Walker, and I'm going to get 16 picks for one player, and I'm going to build.
Correct.
That's the difference in organizations. Right now, they got Brad Holmes.
Correct.
Brad Holmes remind me of a Jimmy. Brad Holmes said, look here, I'm going to build this thing the right way. And how do you build a winning team? You build a defense. He's building it through that defensive line. Okay, he got a few guys on that back end, and he got an offensive line that won't quit. Them boys run block.
Yes. And B, before, because we got about 2 minutes, and Barry Sanders came out with his documentary recently. What? Give me in 2 minutes. Explain, what was it like playing with one of the greatest running backs to ever play the game, Barry Sanders?
Tony, just like I always tell you, sometimes in practice, Barry made some of the most extraordinary runs in practice. Because winners do what? They practice things that they're going to do before they even get to the game. Man, we used to get into practice, and they never let the ones go against each other. So I always get in with the scout team and just bother with him. Man, this dude backed up so quick, Tony. He came in the hole. He backed up faster Then when he came in the hole, I said, man, this man is spectacular. Yes. And that's why, and that's when I knew he was going to be one of the greatest to play this game. Because before Barry got there, I always thought Walter Payton, who's my all-time favorite running back.
Yes.
You know? But look, Barry, to me, will always go down. Him and Emmitt.
As the greatest.
As true competitors. True competitors.
Yes. Yes, and when you talk about true competitors, man, and that you were, and B, man, listen, I know you got a busy day. Thank you for taking your time out. I'm gonna ask you one question, because this is the one question I'm gonna ask you that I gotta get out, because I know a lot of my listeners and my people on Facebook want to know, because a lot of people debate this, and I'm gonna either allow you to let you put yourself in it or not. Who is the hardest hitting safety to come through the University of Miami?
Well, of course, you know, the debate gun. I always tell people Ed Reed was probably the best athlete of all of us.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Sean Taylor, you know, I'm always give props because me and his dad, you know, we talk. And his dad say, look, that's my son. But Benny, I told Sean, if he ever want to make it to the NFL, he need to watch some of your tapes and understand how this position is played. Okay. See, before there was an Ed Reed and a Sean Taylor, there was no 24-hour, you know, football to where right. you can go back and Google it. Because what I always tell the young people at the camp, Google me.
Yes.
You know
yes.
what I mean?
Yes.
It is what it is. And some of my best plays can't be Googleable.
Correct.
You know what
correct.
I mean?
Right.
And that's the travesty of it all. But I don't debate that, because I tell people Ed Reed was a freakish athlete as far as athleticism.
Okay.
But I tell people my size, my speed, and the fact that I'm going to slap you coming across that middle, and I'm still the only Jim Thorpe Award winner.
That's it. You can close, hey, look, close it down. You close it down with that. B, hey, listen, man, thank you. We're going to leave it at that. You ain't got to say no more. We're going to leave it at that. Thank you for joining the show, man. Thank you for taking your time out. It was epic. Me and VC, we're falling out. Thank you. Okay, guys, let's go. Let's go Cowboys this week. Bondo got on his hat. That way you know the Denver Broncos are not in the playoffs. Let's go Cowboys. We're closing out the show.